Prepare yourself. That is the title of my sermon today. And I also want you to prepare yourself for what you are about to hear today. I'm going to start off with a story. Not like I ever do that, but that's a good way to start. I'm sure you all remember a few years back in October of 2003, when we in San Diego had one of the worst fires in California history. A fire that burned over 273,000 acres, which is roughly about 430 square miles. Over 4,800 homes and structures burnt. A fire so big that you can actually see it from space, a satellite. This is according to the California Department of Forestry and Fire. Some of you were affected by these fires and even got all of your personal things together to prepare for an evacuation if it ever came down to that. Some of you may have known friends and have lost their homes. Now I and my family, we had to go through that. As a flame started to approach in the horizon over the hillside, we could see clearly how quick the fire consumed everything in its path. So, we started to pack our things and get what we could into our vehicles, preparing for the worst. The question was, what were we going to pack and what were we going to leave behind? What was the most important thing to us? Of course, it's only natural that you would want to take everything, but it wasn't practical. There isn't much time to think when you are in a hurry. And just this past weekend, we actually witnessed a house fire just down the street from us. And from what I could see, the people that lived in that house had just barely escaped with only the clothes that they were wearing. It appeared as if there was no time to grab any personal belongings. The house, of course, could not be saved, and it had completely burned to the ground. What we have in on our refrigerator is an evacuation checklist, which I brought with us. And what this tells us here, it lists all the things that we would most likely forget and which are considered very important. Some of the things it lists are cash and credit cards. Of course, you probably don't want to forget that. But in more detail, Social Security card, driver's license, passport, medical records, insurance information, all very important. Change of clothing, of course. And also personal hygiene items. Did you ever think of that? Like toothbrush and toothpaste, shampoo, lotion, soap, deodorant, Kleenex, and so on. Then it also lists family photos and baby items, and if you have a baby. And special needs, like a wheelchair, medications, canes for those who have that. And, of course, pet care items and everything you need for a pet. Now, that's actually all it states. It's a very unselfish list because it does not concentrate on you personally, but on others in your family and on pets. See, we didn't have this list at the time, and fortunately we didn't need it since we never had to evacuate. The fire only came within a half a mile of our house, and we were lucky, and it was God who had answered our prayers and made sure nothing was going to happen to us. This was only a little taste of what is going to come in the future. We do know that there will be another time when we will all have to prepare for an evacuation, but for something far worse than this fire. And when I say prepare for an evacuation, I'm not talking about what we had to do. It's a different kind of preparation, which I'm going to go into. We have to be prepared first, and I'm not solely talking about our physical items and on our evacuation lists, but I am talking about our spiritual way of life. The book of Revelation is a book of prophecy, which hasn't really come to pass yet. And it's scary when you think about what is prophesied in this book and what is going to happen on this earth. I do want to start off by reading in Revelation chapter 6. Just what is going to happen. Revelation chapter 6, starting verse 12. I looked when he opened the sixth seal, and behold, there was a great earthquake, And the sun became black as sackcloth of hair, and the moon became like blood. The stars of heaven fell to the earth as a fig tree drops its late figs when it is shaken by a mighty wind. Then the sky receded as a scroll when it is rolled up, and every mountain and island was moved out of its place. And the kings of the earth, the great men, the rich men, the commanders, the mighty men, every slave and every free man, hid themselves in the caves and in the rocks of the mountains. Verse 16, and said to the mountains and the rocks, fall on us and hide us from the face of him who sits on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. For the great day of his wrath has come, and who is able to stand? And also in chapter 8, verse 7, the first angel sounded, and hail of fire followed, mingled with blood, and they were thrown to the earth, and the third of the trees were burned up, and all the green grass was burned up. Then the second angel sounded, and something like a great mountain burned with fire was thrown into the sea, and the third of the sea became blood. And a third of the living creatures in the sea died, and a third of the ships were destroyed. Verse 10, then the third angel sounded, and a great star fell from heaven, burning like a torch. And it fell on the third of the rivers and on the springs of the water. The name of the star is Wormwood. A third of the waters became wormwood, and many men died from the water because it was made bitter. Now this could possibly describe a meteorite that hits the earth. Verse 12 and 13, then the fourth angel sounded, and a third of the sun was struck, and a third of the moon, a third of the stars, so that a third of them were darkened. A third of the day did not shine, and likewise the night. And I looked, and I heard an angel flying through the midst of heaven, saying with a loud voice, woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth, because of the remaining blast of the trumpet of the three angels who are about to sound. This fire that we went through was not even anywhere close as to what is going to happen in this end time. The only way that we can be saved is through God and God alone. But we ourselves have our part in it as well. We have to make sure that we are strong in the church. There is a dangerous warning for those who take this lightly. And that can be found in Revelation chapter 3, verse 14 through 22, where it describes a lukewarm church. Revelation 3, verse 14, to the angel of the church of the Laodiceans write, these things says the Amen, the faithful and the true witness, the beginning of the creation of God. I know your works, that you are neither cold nor hot. I would wish you were cold or hot. So then, because you are lukewarm and neither cold or hot, I will vomit you out of my mouth. Because you say I am rich, have become wealthy, and have need of nothing, and do not know that you are wretched, miserable, poor, blind, and naked. Verse 18, I counsel you to buy from me gold refined in the fire, that you may be rich, and white garments that you may be clothed, that the shame of your nakedness may not be revealed, and anoint your eyes with eye salve that you may see. As many as I love, I rebuke and chasten. Therefore be zealous and repent. Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anybody hears my voice and opens the door, I will come to him and dine with him, and he with me. In verse 21, to him who overcomes, I will grant to sit with me on my throne, as I also overcame and sat down with my Father on his throne. He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. This is the time that we are in right now. This is exactly what's happening. This is why it's important to be part of God's church and do what God commands us to do. If we want to be saved and prepared, we have to watch and be aware of what is happening in this world and also what is happening in the church. So we have to be ready for Christ's return. Let's turn to Matthew chapter 25. I'd like to read about the parable of the wise and the foolish virgins. Matthew chapter 25, verse 1. The kingdom of heaven shall be likened to 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. The virgins described here are pure and purified through Christ's blood. Now five of them were wise and five of them were foolish. Those who were foolish took their lamps, symbolizes God's word, and took no oil with them. And the oil symbolizes God's spirit. But the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. But while the bridegroom was delayed, they all slumbered and slept. And at midnight a cry was heard, "Behold, the bridegroom is coming. Go out and meet him." Then all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said to the wise, "Give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out." But the wise answered, saying, "No, lest there should not be enough for us and you, but go rather to those who sell and buy for yourselves." And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came. And those who were ready went in with him to the wedding, and the door was shut. Afterward, the other virgins came also, saying, "Lord, Lord, open to us." But he answered and said, "Assuredly I say to you, I do not know you." And verse 13, "Watch therefore, for you do not know neither the day nor the hour in which the Son of Man is coming." There are examples of individuals in the Bible who had to prepare to evacuate, and they had to be ready. They had plenty of warning and specific instructions by God to do exactly what was commanded. They had a choice whether or not to listen, but they also had to have faith. The first example I want to talk about is Noah. He was a just man, perfect in his generations, the only man at his time who obeyed God. That can be found in Genesis 6, verse 9. Do you sometimes feel like that you are alone? God gave him a specific command to make an ark in the middle of a desert because it would flood the whole earth. God had told him specifically how to build the ark and what to actually take in with the ark. And you read about that in verses 14 through 22 of Genesis 6. See, Noah had incredible faith and did what God commanded him to do. Even though it seemed strange, you know, at first that God had commanded him to do that, but he trusted him. If Noah had not done this, then we would not be here today. It took only one man. And we have to be like Noah, and we have to do exactly what God commands us to do, or else there will be no hope for mankind and what the overall potential of man is. God saved Noah and gave us another chance. Genesis 9, verse 1. Abram also was given a command and a promise. Now read that in Genesis chapter 12, verse 1 through 3. Genesis chapter 12, verse 1. The Lord said to Abram, "Get out of your country, from your family, and from your father's house, to a land that I will show you. I will make you a great nation. I will bless you, and I will make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you. I will curse him who curses you. And in you all the families on the earth shall be blessed." Abraham's grandson, Lot, was also given a command to prepare for an evacuation, since the city of Sodom and Gomorrah that he lived in would be destroyed because of all the wickedness of the people. Genesis chapter 19, verse 12, start reading. "Then the men said to Lot," and we're talking about the angels that came and saw him to warn him, "Have you anyone else here, son-in-law, your sons, your daughters, and whoever you have in the city? Take them out of this place. For we will destroy this place because the outcry against them has grown great before the face of the Lord. And the Lord has sent us to destroy it." So Lot went out and spoke to his sons-in-laws who had married his daughters and said, "Get up and get out of this place, for the Lord will destroy this city." But to his sons-in-law, he seemed to be joking. A time will come, too, when we are going to, or a warning will be out there for people to know what's going to happen. And a lot of people are going to won't take it seriously. And this is exactly what happened here. Verse 15, when the morning dawned, the angels urged Lot to hurry, saying, "Arise, take your wife and your two daughters who are here, lest you be consumed in the punishment of the city." And while he lingered, the men took hold of his hand, his wife's hand, and the hands of his two daughters, and the Lord being merciful to him, and they brought him out and set him outside the city. So it came to pass, when they had brought them outside, that he had said, "Escape for your life. Do not look behind you, nor stay anywhere in the plain. Escape to the mountains, lest you be destroyed." In verse 18, Lot said to them, "Please know, my lords, indeed now your servant has found favor in your sight, and you have increased your mercy, which you have shown me by saving my life. But I cannot escape to the mountains, lest some evil overtake me and I die." Despite all the warnings, Lot still had doubt here and feared that something would happen to him. Will we react the same way when the time comes when we will have to be evacuated and go where God tells us to go? Reading on, verse 20, "See now the city is near enough to flee to, and is a little one. Please let me escape there, and my soul shall live." And he said to him, "See, I have favored you concerning this thing also, in that I will not overthrow the city for which you have spoken. Hurry, escape there, for I cannot do anything until you arrive there." Therefore the name of the city was called Zoar. And verse 24, "Then the Lord rained brimstone and fire on Sodom and Gomorrah from the Lord out of the heavens. So he overthrew those cities, all the plain, all the inhabitants of the cities, and what grew on the ground." In verse 26, "But his wife looked back behind him, and she became a pillar of salt." She didn't want to let go of where she came from, of the world there. See, there will be a few of us that won't evacuate when the time comes. Not everyone will be chosen for a place of safety. This is why we have to make sure that we remain obedient, faithful, and prepared for Christ's return. Moses was also given a specific command by God to free Israel from Egypt. In Exodus chapter 3, verse 7, the Lord said, "I have surely seen the oppression of my people who are in Egypt, and I have heard their cry because of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows. So I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of Egyptians, and to bring them up from the land to a good and large land, to a land flowing with milk and honey, to a place of the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites. Now therefore, behold, the cry of the children of Israel has come to me, and I have also seen the oppression with which the Egyptians oppressed them." Verse 10, "Come now therefore, and I will send you to Pharaoh, that you may bring my people and children of Israel out of Egypt." Now at first, Moses did not have the faith and confidence that he could do what God commanded. However, God made up his mind that it would be Moses that would do this job, and there was nothing that Moses could do to get himself out of this. Just as Jonah tried to flee from God, that didn't work. He knew after trying to escape, when a great fish swallowed him up and then spit him back out, conveniently right to the place he was supposed to go, that it was God trying to tell him something. If God commands us to do something, we'd better do it, or else there will be consequences. See, God will do whatever it takes for us to wake up. But, just like everybody else, we still have a choice to make. Back to the story. God assured Moses continually that he would be with him the whole time. And as the story goes, Moses went to Egypt and showed miraculous signs to Pharaoh, through God, of course. And after the 10 plagues that God bestowed on Egypt, Pharaoh finally let the people go free. But it wasn't until the 10th plague that this had happened. And this was during the time that the Passover was instituted, followed by the days of unleavened bread. And I actually do want to read about that in Exodus chapter 12, verse 14 through 20. Exodus 12, verse 14. So this day shall be to you a memorial, and you shall keep it as a feast to the Lord throughout your generations. Notice, not just one time. You shall keep it as a feast by an everlasting ordinance. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall, as correctly should be stated, have removed leaven from your houses. For whoever eats leavened bread from the first day until the seventh day, that person shall be cut off from Israel. The first day shall be a holy convocation, and the seventh day shall be a holy convocation for you. No manner of work shall be done on them. Verse 17, so you shall observe the feast of unleavened bread. Skipping down on verse 17, therefore you shall observe this day throughout your generations as an everlasting ordinance. In the first month, on the 14th day of the month in the evening, you shall eat unleavened bread until the 21st day of the month at evening. For 7 days no leaven shall be found in your houses. Verse 20, you shall eat nothing leavened in all your dwellings, and you shall eat unleavened bread. Every year we do this, and it's a preparation that we have to go through. We have to prepare by cleaning our houses, removing all leaven, because it's also what God is commanding. Also in verse 24, you shall observe this thing as an ordinance for you and your sons forever. A lot of people say that everything has been done away with, that we shouldn't keep it. But here it clearly states it. And also in 42, it is a night of solemn observance to the Lord for bringing them out of the land of Egypt. This is that night of the Lord, a solemn observance for the children of Israel throughout their generations. This is also, could also be a prophecy for a time when Christ had to go through the same thing, Passover. So this was even kept before Christ was even born on this earth. We have to prepare for this, and we also must be prepared to participate in the Passover ceremony. And drop down to verse 48. Let all his males be circumcised, and then let him come near and keep it, and he shall be as a native of a land, for no uncircumcised person shall eat it. Of course, there's a spiritual, talking about a spiritual thing here, which is baptism. Have to have that in order to keep the Passover or to partake of the ceremony. Now, even Christ had to flee with his parents from King Herod after Christ was born. I don't have to turn there, but I'll just go to Matthew chapter 2. Reading from Matthew chapter 2, verse 13 to 15. Now when they had departed, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream, saying, arise, take the young child and his mother, flee to Egypt, and stay there until I bring you word, for Herod will seek the young child to destroy him. When he arose, he took the young child and his mother by night and departed for Egypt. It was there until death, and was there until the death of Herod, that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken by the Lord through the prophet, saying, out of Egypt I called my son. They had to wait in Egypt for a little while until Herod was dead, since he was out to kill Christ in Bethlehem. In verse 19 to 23, when Herod was dead, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt, saying, arise, take the young child and his mother, and go to the land of Israel, for those who sought the young child's life are dead. Then he arose, took the young child and his mother, and came into the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus was reigning over Judea, instead of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there. Here we go again, have a little bit of doubt. And being warned by God in a dream, he turned aside into the region of Galilee. And he came and dwelt in a city called Nazareth, that it might be fulfilled, which is spoken by the prophets, he shall be called a Nazarene. A lot of people say that he was born in Nazareth, but as you can plainly see, that was not the case. So there will be a time again when we, just like Israel, we have to be saved out of this world. But we have to respond to God's calling starting now. We individually have to be prepared for the coming of Christ. We read about the fall of Babylon the Great, which is a political, religious, and economical power, at the end time, and at the time where the unimaginable and the most terrible events will take place. So the warning for us is stated in Revelation 18, verse 4 and 5, where it says, "Come out of her, my people, lest you share in her sins, and lest you receive of her plagues. For her sins have reached to heaven, and God has remembered her iniquities." When that time comes, we have to make sure that we are spiritually ready, because we are not going to have the time to prepare all of our physical belongings for evacuation. There are some things that we have to consider at that time. Mark chapter 13, Mark chapter 13, we read about the Great Tribulation, starting verse 14. "When you see the abomination of desolation spoken by Daniel the prophet standing where it ought not, then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let him who is on the housetop not go down into the house, nor enter to take anything out of his house. And let him who is in the field not go back to get his clothes. But woe to those who are pregnant and to those who are nursing babies in those days. And pray that your flight may not be in the winter, or also not on the Sabbath either." You can compare that with Matthew 24:20. "For in those days there will be tribulation such as has not been since the beginning of the creation, which God created until this time, nor ever shall be." Verse 20, "And unless the Lord had shortened those days, no flesh would be saved. But for the elect's sake, whom he chose, he shortened the days. Then if anyone says to you, 'Look, here is the Christ,' or 'Look, he is there,' do not believe it. For false Christs and false prophets will rise and show signs and wonders to deceive, if possible, even the elect." And that's us. "But take heed, see, I have not told you all the things beforehand." We will not know exactly when this time will be. Verse 32 of the same chapter, "But of that day, the hour, no one knows, not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father. Take heed, watch and pray, for you do not know when the time is. It is like a man going to a far country who left his house and gave authority to his servants and to each his work and commanded a doorkeeper to watch. Watch, therefore, for you do not know when the master of the house is coming, in the evening, at midnight, at the crowing of the rooster, or in the morning, lest, coming suddenly, he find you sleeping. And what I say to you, I say to all, watch." We just observed the wedding, as you all know, and took a lot of work and preparation to make this successful. Those directly involved in the wedding party know exactly what I am talking about. It takes time and it takes planning to arrange a perfect wedding. Even though this is very difficult to do, to set up a perfect wedding, because there are always minor problems that take place. For example, try not to trip when walking down the aisle, or accidentally seating your grandma on the wrong side, or better yet, forgetting to announce to your guests to be seated during the whole ceremony. See, accidents happen, but at least we try. See, there is, however, a lot of symbolism having to do with this wedding, as I will now explain. Will we be ready for Christ's return? Matthew chapter 22, we read about the parable of the wedding feast. Matthew chapter 22, starting in verse 1, Jesus answered and spoke to them again by parables and said, "The kingdom of heaven is like a certain king who arranged a marriage for his son, and sent out his servants to call those who were invited to the wedding, and they were not willing to come. Again he sent out the servants, saying, 'Tell those who are invited, see, I have prepared my dinner, my oxen, my fatted calf, cattle are killed, and all things are ready. Come to the wedding.' But they made light of it and went their ways, one of his own farm, another to his business. The rest seized his servants, treated them spitefully, and killed them. But when the king heard about it, he was furious, and he sent out his armies, destroyed those murderers, and burned up their city. He then said to his servants, 'The wedding is ready, but those who were invited were not worthy. Therefore, go into the highways, and as many as you find, invite to the wedding.' So those servants went out into the highways and gathered together all whom they found, both bad and good, and the wedding hall was filled with guests. But when the king came to see the guests, he saw a man there who did not have on a wedding garment. So he said to him, 'Friend, how did you come in here without a wedding garment?' And he was speechless. The king said to the servants, 'Bind him hand and foot, take him away, and cast him out into outer darkness. There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth.'" The whole point of this is stated in verse 14. "For many are called, but few are chosen." See, we have to be ready. We have to have the proper attire to go to a wedding. And those who are invited better respond to the invitation on time and on spiritually. See, on the same account, I want to also go to Revelation chapter 19. Revelation chapter 19, verse 5. "Then a voice came from the throne saying, 'Praise our God, all you his servants and those who fear him, both small and great.' And I heard, as it were, the voice of a great multitude, as a sound of many waters, as a sound of mighty thundering, saying, 'Alleluia, for the Lord God omnipotent reigns.' Verse 7, 'Let us be glad and rejoice and give him glory, for the marriage of the Lamb has come, and his wife has made herself ready.'" Meaning all those who are worthy of the first resurrection. "And to her it was granted to be arrayed in the fine linen, clean and bright, for the fine linen is the righteous acts of the saints. Then he said to me, 'Write, blessed are those who are called to the marriage supper of the Lamb.' And he said to me, 'These are the true sayings of God.'" It's very important to continually keep God's commandments, and we have to remain strong. At the end time, it will become increasingly difficult to remain faithful and obedient because people that we are in close contact with will betray us and one another and will hate us for what we believe in. It will feel like as if we are alone, but we are not alone. See, we've already gone through this to a certain extent. We've known people that were close to us, and they have left and betrayed us, and it's kind of like a foretaste of what's to come. So I guess we should be ready for it, huh? Being ready at all times is what we have to do. Luke chapter 12, verse 35. Luke chapter 12, verse 35 through 40. We read, "Let your waist be girded and your lamps burning. And you yourselves be like men who wait for their master when he will return from the wedding, that when he comes and knocks, they may open to him immediately. Blessed are those servants whom the master, when he comes, will find watching. Assuredly I say to you that he will gird himself and have them sit down to eat and will come and serve them. And if he should come in the second watch or come in the third watch and find them so, blessed are those servants. Verse 39, but know this, that if the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched and not allowed his house to be broken into. Therefore, you also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. We know that the time is near. We know what's going on in this world, and we have to be prepared. In closing, I'd like to turn to Revelation 22, verse 7. Revelation 22, 7. Behold, I am coming quickly. Blessed is he who keeps the words of the prophecy of this book. And also in verse 12. And behold, I am coming quickly, and my reward is with me, to give to everyone according to his work. And drop down to 14. Blessed are those who do his commandments, that they may have the right to the tree of life, and may enter through the gates into the city. But outside are dogs and sorcerers and sexually immoral and murderers and idolaters, and whoever loves and practices a lie. I, Jesus, have sent my angel to testify to you these things in the churches. I am the root and the offspring of David, the bright and the morning star. And the Spirit and the bride say, come. And let him who hears say, come. And let him who thirsts say, come. Whoever desires, let him take the water of life freely. We must make ourselves spiritually strong, and we have to observe what is going on in this world, making sure that we do not fall into it as many in the church have already done so. Many people will not be ready for Christ's return, but we have the advantage right now. Will we be ready when that time comes?